Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by Chevrolet. Chevy runs deep.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 162 for August 24th. Camaro ZL Wow. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2200 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
I feel like saying, Peter, Kumbaya, Peter, Kumbaya.
Buongiorno, Johnny.
It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
And I'm saying the Kumbaya. I don't know if you ever saw this movie called When We Were Kings.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When, you know what? When Ali went to fight Frazier in the Rumble in the Jungle.
It was just an awesome movie, too.
Awesome documentary. Yeah. Maybe the best documentary I've ever seen.
Yeah, and, that was something.
But that's what Ali got everybody in, where was that, the Congo, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, well, Zimbabwe or whatever, but going, Ali, Kumbaya. Yeah. So I'm thinking, Peter, Kumbaya, because you laid down a rant this week on your website that, again, is for the second week in a row, has got this town buzzing.
Yeah, it was kind of part two of the column from a week before about GM's issues. I think they have a perpetual image problem with Mr. Ackerson, and I think there's a tone deafness down there that I don't understand. Really, because there's smarter people than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've been hearing it from a lot of moles inside, and the amazing thing are the dealers.
Hmm.
Dealers are not happy. You know, they're happy with the product,
mm-hmm.
but they're not happy with anything else. And, you know, it's kind of a leadership style that I'm questioning. I mean, people don't like to be called out and being told that they're not doing all that great when, in fact, as we've discussed, you know, GM probably has their finest lineup of vehicles in their history right now.
I would agree.
I mean, they had some great stuff in their heyday when they controlled 48% of the market, but they have some tremendous. And it's not just the ZL1s and the ZR1s and the ZL6s of the world. It's, you know, the Sonic and the Cruze. And, you know, they're building some really, really good stuff.
They are. They're crossover vehicles, very competent, both midsize and large size, and whole number of other things. You know, we've talked a lot about the ATS on this program and what a huge step forward that is. From a design, engineering, manufacturing standpoint, much less just the experience of the car itself.
Yeah, and, you know, the reviewers who've had a chance to drive it are all saying, you know, wow, you know, it is the most bold 3 Series competitor to come along mm-hmm. in ever.
Right.
So
the problem ain't the product.
No, it isn't. I think it's a matter of style. It's a matter of...
You mean management style.
Yeah, management style. You know, kind of a... When I say tone deaf, I just... You know, I think there's a lack of a gut feel for what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hate to mention the two other people in town. And even though I have my quarrels with Sergio's way, I mean, there's no question he's a smart guy and he knows a lot about the business. And here's Mr. Mullally, who everyone said, well, he comes from the aviation business. Well, exactly. He came from a business that understands manufacturing, dealing with workers,
selling to customers.
Selling to customers who are the airlines, but in fact are the everyday consumers who experience the planes. So, and it's a matter of style, mm-hmm. you know, and I think Ackerson has had trouble ever since he took over, you know,
Yeah, well, to me, style's important, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about results.
Yeah.
And as we've talked about, the results at Chrysler, I think, are astonishing. In fact, they even started to grow market share when they had crap in the showroom.
Yeah.
It was just a new organizational approach to how to do things. And, you know, as we've talked about here extensively, in fact, we got to get him on the show, is get Mullally on here, because...
Yeah, Alan said he would do it.
He has. He told us that... he told me he'd do it. He told me he wants to...
Yeah.
He'd love to be in this chair here. But the point is that he's changing the culture at Ford, and he's doing it in, a brilliant leadership way. So, yeah, to your point, when you look at the results... They're really there at Chrysler and Ford.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people inside GM would maybe quarrel with the opinion that they're underperforming the market. And I don't know, I guess we could debate that, but I would think they would be doing a lot better than they are now with the products they have.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they should be doing better
mm-hmm.
in the market.
Well, you might have said a key thing here. I mean, if the dealers aren't happy and if the factory's not working well with its stores, there could be a real breakdown there.
Well, I don't think I've talked to several old-time, very experienced dealers who have served on management boards, dealer boards, and, you know, their concern is they don't get the feeling that Dan really wants to spend any time understanding their world. And, you know, you've got to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's a car business, you know.
Yeah.
You make a product and people have got to want to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of magic that makes that happen. You can check all the boxes like the old GM did and came out with thoroughly competent cars that were boring as hell. And then they had to incentivize the craziness out of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, so if you, and we saw the miracle happen when Lutz got in there. You saw how quickly that could change. One design cycle, boom, it was, you know, they were right there. So,
yeah.
You need people who truly understand manufacturing, as you say, but really understand the car business.
Well, when I speak of management style, I really think there's a lot to it because, you know, Ackerson has a naval background and, you know, I appreciate anyone who's served. But it's one thing to order around a bunch of 19-year-olds on deck who, you know, who really don't have any other options.
Okay.
You know, that's one way. But, you know, when you have a vast company like this, they're not going to respond to that kind of style, like the blunderbuss effect, like, you know.
Yeah, look, people don't. And, you know, the analogy that I drew that I used on Autoline Daily was it's like President Jimmy Carter, sometime in the late 1970s, telling the country that it's suffering from a malaise. Well, that didn't work. And then you had Ronald Reagan come along and say, it's morning in America,
yeah.
and win by a landslide. So it's
so I think Ackerson,
it's a style of leadership that you don't go berate your people to expect them to start to rally behind what you want them to do.
Yeah. And so, you know, this week's column gave readers a little glimpse into the battles that go on. I don't think, you know, a lot of people within the industry don't know that that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of battles and give and take between PR staff, PR leaders, and media people. And, you know, if you're deemed as someone who writes a favorable story, quote unquote, then you get access.
Mm-hmm.
And media people, the one thing they absolutely must have is access.
Correct.
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need access.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, I have a pretty good judge of people, and I have a real good feel of people, and I have moles everywhere, and I don't need to sit in a room with a group interview with a bunch of other media guys getting a feel for the new CEO of whatever the company. So that doesn't really work with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's frustrated many a PR leader and staff, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I've always said, you know, I calls them as I sees them. And plus, you know, when I set out to do this site, I set out to influence the influencers. And,
right.
You know, and we also said, you know, we're going to talk about stuff that's usually talked about off the record.
Mm-hmm.
Or as they say, in deep background, which means you're having a few pops in the bar with your colleagues. And
yeah, they just don't want to get burned.
Yeah. So, and, but I've always, you know, Auto Extremist has always been sort of extreme in that we talk about what everybody's talking about, that they're allegedly, they either don't want people here or, you know, for political reasons, they can't afford to have people here. Mm-hmm. So,
no, that's right. And this town has got an amazing underground, an amazing grapevine. You know, there's all kinds of conduits of information here. And it's amazing, too, the various different levels that you pick it up on.
Well, you were just out west on the West Coast. And, right. You know, I mean, the Internet's obviously changed everything. But, you know, it's a very small industry.
Yeah.
Because you have people on the West Coast embedded in all the West Coast import car companies. Half of them worked in Detroit at one time or the other. So
a lot of them did.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Absolutely. A lot of their executives did.
Yeah. And we used to joke as soon as their plane crossed over into the California airspace, it was just like, Detroit? No, you know. But my columns have been, over the last 2 weeks, have reverberated around pretty wildly, actually.
Yeah.
Next week, I won't be writing about GM. So.
Well, you don't want to flog a dead horse.
No.
I'm not trying to say that GM's dead. I'm using an old cliche.
I just think there's a vast disconnect between the leadership at GM and the true believers who are doing the work.
Right.
And the true believers are doing a tremendous job.
Right. And you celebrate their victories. You celebrate their successes. You celebrate their achievements. You don't go and berate them that they're not doing enough.
Well, you don't say, oh, we don't do world-class engines and transmissions. Really? I think that there's some great engines. And not just, you know, not just the show ponies.
Not just the performance ones.
But,
right?
You know, their small turbos are superb, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, well.
Oh, well, right.
How was that Honda that you can't talk about?
They got a good car. You know, you're right. I was just out on for one of the waves of the media launch for the Accord. It's embargoed, so I can't talk a whole lot about it right now. But I can say they've got a very competent car. Can talk about the styling because they've released photos of it, you know, going back.
They always look different in the flesh, though.
Yeah, they do. And but this one's close to the photos.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a competent design, but it's not the kind of design that would ever set my heart on fire.
But did you want to relay that quote? Maybe you don't want to, but the guy said that kind of struck you as odd.
Oh, no, I think I can say this, is that in the course of their presentation, they said, they don't care about having the best styling or the best fuel economy, which shocked me. Because now what they did say is, we want the best all-around car, and it is a very good all-around car.
But that's not something the old Honda would
say. The old Honda loved to be the leader in fuel economy. Yeah. Absolutely thrived on it. And what, you know, companies like Hyundai and Ford and others will tell you is that it is critically important for your brand to be viewed as fuel efficient, and the death for it to be viewed as fuel inefficient.
Well, I think fuel efficient is the new safety.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be there was a lot of hand-wringing about safety, but now, I mean, you know, actually safe cars, I mean, it's price of entry, but
right.
fuel economy is a big deal. And, you know, witness Ford's unbelievable, I mean, really incredible numbers on the new C-Max, you know, 47 in the city, 47
yeah,
on the highway.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's...
That's really impressive.
Yeah.
Speaking of safety, what did you think of this IIHS, what do they call it, small offset crash test?
Well, you know what, I really got an issue with it. I mean, you can crash test vehicles to the point where, you know, you can come up with every contingency. You know, now this is the latest one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm just wondering, you know, where does it stop? I mean, you know, walking around or driving around, you know, there's no guarantees. You know,
right.
You're going to get, there are accidents will happen, but I don't think we can construct our vehicles to be absolutely bulletproof. This goes back to,
right.
Remember when John DeLorean hooked up with Allstate and when they first developed airbags? And the whole thing was, well, you don't have to wear a seatbelt with the airbag. It's just like, well, wait a minute. I mean, what are you doing? You know? I don't know. I think, do those crashes happen? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to end up with tanks eventually that no one can afford? And yeah, if it goes unchecked, yeah. I just don't understand the mentality that, Oh, we have to make it so nothing bad ever happens.
Yeah.
I don't think that.
Well, there were two cars that got good ratings, the Acura TL and the Volvo S60. And while I can't say a whole lot about what Honda told me, because their car qualified, is that starting this fall, all their new models will meet that standard. And so I can say the new Accord is coming this fall, so logically you could say that the new Honda Accord will meet that standard.
What's that weird German test? We need a name for this test, a kind of a catchy name if they're going to keep doing it. It's that test in Germany where they evade
you mean like the Moose test, the Elk test.
Yeah, yeah. Right. We need something for this.
Yeah.
Like the drunk at 2 a.m. test.
Right.
I don't know what it is.
Well, you know, to your point, you can meet the standard, but it adds mass to the car. So, you know, which works against you, because that mass has got to be in the front of the car where it's going to affect the handling and it's going to burn more fuel. There's no two ways around it.
And then, you know, the words coming out at Volkswagen that the new Golf, the next gen Golf, is 200 pounds lighter.
Yeah. Yeah,
because of this platform, this architecture.
I wonder if it meets this small offset crash test.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
what else were we going to talk? Oh, David Champion.
Oh, David Champion leaving Consumer Reports and going to Nissan as a testing guy.
Now, speaking of jihads, Consumer Reports has been on a jihad against Ford for 2 years now.
About on my Ford Touch.
My Ford Touch. And, you know, Ford has upgraded it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I told
improved
you.
To, it, right.
Yeah, like I told you today on the phone, I don't even exploit 10% of these systems on these cars. I just don't. I mean, I got, you know, get the temperature right. And if you have to use a nav once in a while, fine. Otherwise, you know, I'm driving. You know, I want to drive. But they've been on a jihad. And recently. Today, they just had another blast. Like, what did they say? It was junk or?
They said it stinks.
Yeah.
In its headline. And, you know, I find that a very curious word for a somewhat proper organization to use. And, I mean, this is like getting into tabloid kind of headlines.
Well, they're trying
blaring out that Ford's system stinks.
They're trying to get attention. And, you know.
Yeah.
And then here's
media hungry.
And here's David Champion going over to Nissan to become, what, guru of making cars better?
Well, you know.
Or whatever the title is.
I think it's extremely intelligent of Nissan to do this.
Yes, I agree.
Consumer Reports, thanks to David Champion in a lot of ways, has got this great reputation for evaluating cars. And I think they do a good job of evaluating cars. I don't think their quality ratings are worth it, but nonetheless, I think it's brilliant for Nissan to hire him. But to your point, here's David. No, I mean, when did he know this job was coming?
Well,
months ago.
Yeah,
right?
He had to have been talking months ago, and yet Consumer Reports kept firing away. Yeah, it's a little.
Well, you know, look, I agree with some of their criticisms about the MyFord Touch system. And I'm, in fact, driving a Dodge Dart Turbo right now with the Uconnect system, which they praise. And I do agree, it's a better system. But is it that much better? Yeah, it's better. Is the Ford system so terrible that it stinks? Nah. So it's very curious to see, you know, this media, you know, foray that they're launching into. Because, yeah, the Uconnect system's better than Ford's, but we're not talking massive degrees here by any stretch.
Yeah. And, you know, well, I know you know David. I don't know him, but, you know, it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
Just before he goes to Nissan.
Right.
You know, who's Ford is one of Nissan's, obviously, mainstream competitors, direct competitors.
So. Uh-huh.
How about that commercial break, man?
Let's go to it, Ben. Well, hey, we've got to tell everybody who's watching right now, we've got Al Oppenheiser, the chief engineer. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do.
The Camaro. Now, you guys all just changed all those titles and everything, right?
We did. We changed titles, but...
So 2 weeks ago, what was your title?
Chief engineer.
Oh, okay.
Tough to explain in 20 minutes, but I'm still waiting for the increased pay to come with the increased responsibility.
Oh, sure. I know.
We were just talking last time Al and I were together was in the back seat of one of the Camaro Pace cars at the start of the Indy 500 2 years ago.
It was awesome. You had a great quote when we made our lap and got off at the pits, and you said, I can die now. That was incredible.
It was such a fantastic opportunity. I know Jim Campbell and Mark Royce corralled me and said, we got a slot. I said, yeah. But to see the crowd at that speedway is just unbelievable. When the crowd is drowning out the sound of the race engines on the pace laps, just amazing. Really, really. And, yeah. I've heard drivers in the 60s, 70s, 80s, all throughout Indy history saying, we run around here all week and it's or all month and it's empty. And then when you get on race day, you can't believe the crowd. And going into turn one, it looks like a tunnel. And that
was
all.
It's a wall of humanity. Right. I mean, literally a wall. In fact, it's so surreal almost. It almost looks like a George Lucas set, of some sort of weird.
When we went into three and came out of four and aimed down the front straight, it was just like, wow, this is something. Once in a lifetime deal.
It was great.
So, chief engineer. So, this is your baby. In fact, we should point out to everybody we happen to have a ZL1, and we're going to talk a lot about this car, but all things Camaro too. How you got involved with this from the very beginning? I mean, how involved are you in this car?
Very involved, John. I was actually in the room when Ed Welburn. We used to have what was called the Gang of Five. It was Ed Welburn, Rick Wagner, Bob Lutz, John Smith, and Jim Queen. We used to decide, or I should say they used to decide what concepts we were going to do for the next year's auto show. And we were actually going to do a Corvette concept car that ended up in the Transformers second movie.
The Stingray.
Mm-hmm. And at the time, Bob Lutz had said that he didn't want to do that. Dave Hill didn't want to do that because we were going to be introducing the ZR1. And he didn't want anything stealing his thunder. And so we were struggling on what were we going to do to make a splash at the auto show. And it was my responsibility to build the concept cars. And those take quite a while to do. And so I said, hey, look, I've got you five together for maybe 10 more minutes. And if we don't decide, we're going to be late. And I don't see anything here that's grabbing any of you. And Ed Welburn said, if I can only do one car, and I got to make a big splash, I think it's time to bring the Camaro back. And it was, I had goosebumps. It was just great. It was great. And it was a thrill of a lifetime to be in the room when they decided that
we're going to bring it back. Ed's a huge Camaro fan.
Oh, yeah.
And told us about it. Had two studios, right? Working
he did.
On two different designs?
He did. We had a more of a retro-looking one than today's car. And we were looking at the full-size Clay, again, with the leadership. And he just had a notion that we needed to go more contemporary because at the time we knew Chrysler was going to come out with a Challenger, hadn't seen it yet, and Ford was getting dated, and so we figured they were going to come out with something new. And if we came out with a retro-looking one, you might sell the first year, second year to the people that had been waiting 8 years for it to come back.
Yeah.
But then what do you do? Right. So very, very astute judge of the Camaro world. Ed had another Clay concept going on in Tom Peters' studio in the basement, and of course, very near to what you see here today.
In the basement.
Studio X.
Yeah, Studio X.
Well, Ed sort of, when we were over there, Ed sort of waved in the general direction of Studio X.
That's right.
So tell us about, so we have the standard Camaro with the V6. How much horsepower?
323 horse.
Which was an increase.
It was an increase.
From an intro.
Right.
And then from there, you go, as a buyer, you go to the SS.
Right.
Which is 426.
That's the LS3.
Right. Now, then the big leap is to this car, which we just had for a week at Auto Extremis, and we absolutely loved it. It's just amazing for a big car. A lot of mass, just
talking ZL1.
Yeah, ZL1, how blindingly fast it is. Before we talk about this, tell us about the 1LE.
The 1LE, okay. I've got several team members that wanted to make sure I got a chance, so thank you. We watched your show on Woodward.
And Jim Hall said it was just a tape job,
isn't. It's not. But seriously, when we were developing the suspension for the ZL1, we had an SS out there that we were doing things like increasing the length of the rear stab bar, and we created the drop links into the lower control arms that you see today. And lo and behold, on the way to creating the ZL1, we came up with a track car. And when we first came out with the car, we got dropped from the 10 best list, which we were all disappointed. And Angus McKenzie had written us a letter, and he said, hey, the reason you dropped out was because this has terminal understeer, the SS, that was. And so I communicated back to him that it was our commitment that we're going to continue to work on that. Although 2% of the market will tell us that we have a terminal understeer problem, the rest of the 98%, they love the car. So as we started to develop a ZL1 suspension, driving around in the SS, and it was a yellow SS, and we bought aftermarket black wheels, and so because of the Transformer movie, we called it internally, we called it Yellow Jacket. And so then we added a 391 final drive close ratio gearbox, the ZL1 front and rear wheels, and then we stretched the ZL1 tires from the front onto the rear wheels. And then we gave it a unique look. And the Camaro fans out there know that the 1LE was Chevrolet's help with the SECA and the Canadian Players Association series back in the mid-80s, where you couldn't change suspension parts, but you, I should say, you could change suspension parts, but you couldn't change brakes, and they were well underbraked. So some of the guys that still work at GM in performance developed brake packages, developed an aluminum drive shaft and a gearbox, and all of a sudden Camaro started winning at the track. And so to pay tribute to the work that Chevy did with those folks, and that was an RPO called the 1LE, we brought it back, and we distinguished it from the SS by putting a flat black hood wrap on it. It sets it apart from the SS it comes from, but it's the 426 horsepower LS3. We've got monotube dampers. Again, the 391 final drive and the other bits from the ZL1 are the short throw shifter, wheels and tires, and then we have a unique splitter on the front and rear. But we just had one of our best drivers, Aaron Link, burn a lap at VIR at 258, which is phenomenal for an SS Camaro with this track package.
What would the top Mustang turn time-wise?
Not that I would know what a Mustang turns, but the 302 was 3 minutes and 4 seconds. And so for $3,500 added onto an SS, which is about $7,000 cheaper than a Boss 302, of course, this is our test guys, but we feel confident that when Car and Driver does their lightning laps, that we're going to be in that sub-3-minute category. And that would put it, if they ran the time that we ran, that would put it in the top Lightning Lap 2 category and put it as the 18th fastest car that they would have evaluated. So we'll wait to see what they do.
So it's aimed at the real hardcore enthusiasts.
And what's the package cost again?
It's about $3,500, and then just check the box for the 1LE option.
Mm-hmm. And you got a much more serious car.
Much more serious car. It's for that 2% we talked about that really want to take it. You know, weekend racing, we are working with a gentleman that races T2 in SECA. He's now racing with 1LE bits on his car, and he's been getting pole positions, and we're very encouraged. It looks like he's
going to make the runoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're hoping that word gets out that you can update your the other thing we're doing is you can soon update your 2010, 11, or 12 SS Camaro with a 1LE performance parts kit.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so we really want to go after the racer, the Camaro spirit of the 1LE.
Yeah. I love hearing how you're so much into racing, and I'm sure that you're learning stuff on the track that's making its way back to the car.
Absolutely. Our goal, of course, we've got Camaros participating in the GT series, in Grand Am Cup Racing, and as you saw a few weeks ago, we announced we're going to be in the Nationwide Series with the Camaro body next February. We're really working hard with Jim Campbell and his organization and trying to find pockets where Camaro can be a success. And of course, our Copo Camaro is just outstanding.
That's awesome.
You know, Dr. Jamie Meyer, myself, when we go to Camaro shows, we go to drag races, we hear a lot from the first-gen old-timers that say, hey, we've done everything you can do with a first-gen Camaro, and we can't beat the new Mustang and the new Challenger, who have updated their new body styles for the drag strip. And so please do something with this fifth generation Camaro. And the Copo Camaro, as you've seen in the news, has been recently doing some great things on the drag strip.
Let's remind the listeners and viewers what Copo stands for.
Central Office Production Order, COPO.
Back in the late 60s, right, there were some wild Copo cars that,
right,
escaped, 427 Camaros and stuff like that.
So what are some of the differences with the Copo Camaro?
Well, the Copo starts as a rolling chassis from Oshawa Assembly Plant and goes to an upfitter and gets...
So it's a hand-built car.
It's a
hand-built
car. It's a drag car.
It's definitely a drag car. It's not a street-legal car. Uh-huh. It's meant for the drag strip.
And but it has production sheet metal.
Has production sheet metal, showroom stock.
Uh-huh.
Right.
How showroom stock is the nationwide, though? It's just a step in the right direction.
It's a
right?
step in the right direction. Not quite showroom stock, but... Yeah.
Actually, the nationwide cars are not going to be as production similar as the new Sprint Cup cars are.
Right. Really?
Yeah, the new Sprint Cup cars definitely have a production, more production look than the nationwide cars.
Oh,
nationwide cars kind of look like funny cars. Hmm. But the new Sprint Cup cars, I mean, the new Chevrolet SS, the Ford Fusion, the Toyota Camry, I mean, they definitely have...
They look more like what's in the showroom.
Well, it's what NASCAR's need to do.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
When they went to the Car of Tomorrow, it was safe and all that, but they homogenized them all.
Right.
And they found that was... they alienated a lot of their hardcore fans.
Mm-hmm.
So... We just had the ZL1, and man, we loved it.
I loved your article, by the way.
So you wrote about Extremis.
Well,
right?
We did. I did On the Table, and Bud did Roadkill.
Mm-hmm. Roadkill was great.
And, you know, it's just people outside the business, a lot of viewers or enthusiasts, they don't understand, you know, appreciate the work that goes in these cars and the enthusiasts behind them. But the moment you get behind the wheel, you know that the enthusiasts were behind the development. And it's just pretty impressive. I mean, granted, it's, you know, 4,100 pounds, but when you're nailing it, it doesn't feel like 4,100 pounds.
Not at all. Not at all. And
and the brakes and the turn-in, and wow, it's something.
You know, one of the things, glad you brought up the mass issue, because I'm sure someone will call in a question on it. We always get hit on mass. So occasionally I'll ask somebody, what do you mean it's heavy? What do you mean it's the mass problem? And they don't really know. Or they just read about it.
Well, they just hear. You know.
Right. So I'll just tell you, if you take a Camaro and you look at the frontal area, which is the way it is because of the track width. And by the way, as you know, track width and tire patch get you wins on the racetrack, which we do. We beat our competition handily. And, you know, you've seen all the blogging wars go on, but very confident in this car that it can beat anything in its segment on the track. So if you take the frontal area, if you take the wheels and tires, which the number one reason people buy a Camaro is because of the styling. Biggest reason within the styling is the split front and rear 20-inch wheels and tires. So if you take the styling from the tires and wheels, if you take the frontal area, which helps us win on the track, and if you take the independent rear suspension, which helps you win on the track, and regular road driving, those three things, that's about 280 pounds.
Huh.
So if you take a Mustang versus Camaro, model by model, from a V6 all the way up to their high-performance model, we're about 280 to 300 pounds difference. So the things that we get negative input because we're heavy are the things that help it be number one in the segment for three straight years. Just interesting information.
Just saying.
Just saying.
But I'll bet the next time you make a lighter Camaro.
We're always trying to make a lighter Camaro. In fact, some of the things on the ZL1, the wheels and tires on this are forged. They're 22 pounds lighter as a in the corners than the SS it comes from, which is where you want mass out at the unsprung corners.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You see the carbon fiber hood insert, which helps... you know, get the mass down in the car, and it's basically near 50-50 split front and rear weight distribution.
Right.
So, and, you know, we've done things from the initial design, like we put the battery in the rear tub, again, to try to get that 50-50 balance.
Mm-hmm.
But it's you kind of, as someone at work says, you dance with the girl you brought.
Right.
It's a large architecture, but we've made great use of it, especially in the ZL1, on trying to get it around the track faster than the other guy.
Yeah.
So tell us, you mentioned something before we came out, and I thought that was very cool. Now, GM has a high-performance driving course, which they just instituted when Bob Lutz came on, right? Or was it in the works before Bob?
Well, it was affectionately called the Lutzberg Ring. it's the MRC. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to be there for any media events, but
yeah, I have.
It's a fantastic track that takes Pahrumps from Spring Mountain. It takes different portions of the track from great tracks around the world. And basically the car is never in a steady state. And we do all of our development work out there for performance cars. And what I was mentioning to you, Peter, was the 24-hour test that we run.
Which I think our listeners and viewers would be fascinated, because that sounds like, wow.
Yeah, it's not 24, start the clock and end 24 hours later. It's 24 accumulated hours. We have some of the top drivers anywhere I put them up. You guys maybe have met Jim Merrow, Aaron Link.
He's the guy that did the ZR1 record at the Nürburgring.
I mean, and we have just top-notch drivers, and they're all what we call level 3 certified. They all drive the Nürburgring, but they put their time in. Usually it's a tank of fuel, which is about 15 to 20 laps, car depending.
How long is the course?
It's 2.2 miles.
Right.
I think I have that right. But average speed is about 85 miles an hour, average track speed. But the 24-hour test is meant to test the durability of the parts. And not only did we develop things like the fuel pump, and we actually used our math modeling to follow the fuel slosh as it went around the track, and we added extra pickup points so that basically we can suck the tank of fuel dry on the racetrack instead of fuel stumble at 3/8 of a tank or something. But we ran the endurance, accumulated 24 hours on the car, and the requirement to pass is you're not basically breaking parts. You're not basically changing brake pads. We do tire inspections, change them as required, but the chassis, the powertrain, all the parts are supposed to survive the 24-hour accumulated time. And the cool thing about the ZL1 was Mark Royce, as you know, is quite a driver himself. We let him do the last leg. He's been so much part of this car from day one that it was kind of cool to have him come out and do the last leg. And we got a team picture with him. He did take the car out. You were mentioning earlier he took the car out west with him and was able to talk to the media early and speaking from experience, which is really cool when your leadership can speak from track experience on their own.
Yeah, last
no doubt about it.
He did that last December, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. I just love hearing true car guys and gals at executive levels going to the point of burning up a whole tank full in your 24-hour endurance.
Right.
And so he's obviously level 3 certified as well.
He is.
See, that's how you get great cars.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And he's had so much of an influence on all the Camaros and all the performance cars, the Vs, Corvette, and so on. It's spends a lot of time out there.
So how big is your team?
How big is our team? Well, the way we're structured within GM, it's a matrix organization. So if you look on the org chart,
they rotate through.
I have an administrative assistant.
Okay.
But there are literally 200 people that come to work every day to work on Camaro, all the chassis, electrical, interior, integration. And the neat thing is a lot of our integration guys also work on Corvette. So we've got the DNA of performance. And then there are also a lot of guys who were in the performance division, which I was in the performance division working for Mark. Many of my people worked on the original V, the 322V. So the DNA is there for performance, and the crossbreeding of Corvette and Camaro is there on a daily basis.
Like it was back in the old days.
Absolutely.
For a while. Anyway.
So Ford's got a new Mustang coming. How are you guys going to respond to that?
They do. I respond. I'm grateful that they're going to tip their hand before we decide what we're going to do next with the Camaro. I understand from what you read that they're going to come off their LS architecture, which the current one is. They're going independent rear suspension, and I don't know how they're going to take mass out by doing that, but I'm waiting to see. And then, of course, Mr. Mullally has said they're going to put a four-cylinder in everything, so we fully anticipate with CAFE requirements they're going to enter a four-cylinder into the sports segment.
Right.
So
EcoBoost.
EcoBoost. Don't know the volume, if it's an export hedge or what, but I'm glad they have to tip their hand before we do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I imagine, if I'm guessing, they'll do the bigger four EcoBoost to power the standard car, and then maybe the EcoBoost V6, and then still have a V8 available.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah, it would.
So, Jen, should we do our next commercial break?
You know, I think we ought to do that. It's a good time to do it, and just so happens that our commercial break is going to have us giving a shout-out to our friends at Chevrolet.
All right.
It was more than a car to him. It really was his baby.
Oh, no. That's my old Chevy. Dear God.
Okay, Ben, it's time for a rapid fire. Why don't you run it? It's so much better with music. Okay, Al, you know this is the rapid-fire part of the show, and Luigi B. Wants to know, any chance of seeing a hardtop convertible Camaro?
No.
Oh. Well, there's an easy one.
Camaro's never had a hardtop convertible, and we're staying true to the...
Plus it adds...
Mass.
Mass and complication.
Mm-hmm. Chuck Grenchy wants to know, next-gen Camaro, when? Smaller, lighter? Well, we talked a little bit about that. Probably be a little bit lighter.
We're having fun with this generation right now. We're not done with it. Next generation, we've got to look at our CAFE contribution for GM's fuel economy.
Plus, you have to take, he has to take the Sergeant Schultz defense. At this point.
I know nothing.
Nothing.
Yes.
Let's see. Mike DeWight says, any surprises in store for the current gen before it gets redesigned?
Yes. It's rapid fire, isn't it?
Yeah, that's good. We like that. Succinct.
Well,
moving
just if I could, we've done everything from transformer cars. We've done Synergy green cars you've seen rolling around.
David Welch's favorite, by the way.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
We've
that's
done...
Right. Hey, he's going to New York.
Yeah,
he's getting a big promotion.
Yeah, that's a big deal for him.
Sorry, Al.
That's okay.
Ahead.
We've done Indy Pace cars. We're doing track cars. We're doing high-performance, high-horsepower cars. There's a lot of room to play.
And that's part of the secret to the segment, right, is coming out with these different models and variations.
Right.
And
well, I think we've seen Ford do that with the
that's
Mustang.
Exactly. Yeah. You're right. Ford does that about every 6 months or so. And I think, and I said this before, the great thing about this era, and you mentioned it earlier in the show, we're talking about 580, 662 horsepower cars. We're talking
about... That's impressive, but 326, is that the base?
323 in the
V6. Think about it.
More horsepower than the original Z28.
You cannot buy a Camaro with under 300 horsepower.
And
sorry,
we have
you
a 30,
can't do it.
Yeah, we have a 30-mile-per-gallon version of that, too.
See, and that's, to me, again, as we said before,
yeah, Ford,
it's the golden age.
Yeah, Ford and Chevy both have 30.
It's great.
V6 is something.
Yeah.
So how many different models of Camaro are there right now?
Well, there's V6 and V8. And then there's coupe and convertible. And then we have a 1LE and a ZL1. The 1LE is coupe only. ZL1 is coupe and convertible.
Gotcha. And then the SS.
Mm-hmm. Jeff W. wants to know, any plans to export the next Camaro?
We do export this Camaro. Interestingly enough...
Canada doesn't count.
Canada doesn't count, but...
that's not export.
Nor does Mexico is really an export.
Yeah, for that matter, right.
But we've shipped to the Middle East since day one.
Mm-hmm.
We ship to Brazil. We have a car that goes to Europe, China. Interestingly enough, typically in a car program, you have to look at homologating or regionalizing a car, and it adds a lot of cost. But the reason they buy and want the Camaro is because it's an American performance car. And I'll give you an example. When they showed the Transformers movie in China, in Beijing, the authorities had to shut the movie down because it was causing such a commotion. We introduced the Camaro to China shortly after that, and every order was yellow with black stripes. So we do export it today in quite a few countries.
Very interesting.
And Russia. I mean, it goes everywhere.
George from Brooklyn. I don't think he's been out that much. He asks, are there any police Camaros?
There are police Camaros. They've been kind of on a loaner basis or parade basis.
Because I've seen at least one.
Right, and we are talking to some of the municipalities, but you were mentioning earlier the SS comes from the PPV police car off of Zeta 1, which is the predecessor to this architecture, is the one the G8 and the Holden Commodore came off of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A.M. Guerrero wants to know, will we be expecting a small displacement turbo in the Camaro anytime in the future?
No time in the near future.
Okay.
But you can never say never.
He also says to John and Peter, any comments on the Earth Dreams name of Honda's new generation engines?
Well, you know, Honda does some weird stuff.
Yeah.
As long as they're great.
If it works for them, I suppose, but it, you know.
I'm not a big fan of Mazda's Sky Active.
No, not Sky Active, no.
So I don't know about
that. Not the term. I mean, the technology, yeah, but not the name. Jeff Perry wants to know, was there any thought given to providing an open rear window on the latest generation Camaro?
I hear it.
Rear quarter window.
At least once a week. A true hardtop is what you're saying.
Yeah.
The difference between the original true hardtops and today is the roof crush tests, and we get regulated out of that, being able to do that successfully without adding a lot of mass.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got a phoner here. Ben, let's go to the first of those.
Hi, this is Jeff W. from Albany, New York. In light of the current slowdown of the European market, I just wanted to get the impression of the panel of where is Sergio going to find the money to revive Alfa Romeo? I mean, Alfa Romeo sales are already minuscule, even in Europe. And at this point, I'm not even sure if Fiat can save it. Your thoughts? Thanks.
Oh, that's a good question. Because, you know, Marchionne has announced that since the European market is tanking, he's cutting out all this investment, $500 million or something like that, just this year alone. I think that's right. And I hadn't thought of that before because Alfa needs help, you know, and if he's cutting back, I don't know what.
Well, I mean, you know, his statements, you know, when he tried to suggest that all the manufacturers get together in Europe and, you know, stop this insanity of the pricing and stuff. I mean, you know, the European situation could derail Marchionne's plans big time. And, you know, I've never believed the Alpha, his bullishness on Alpha by 2014. I just don't see it. Mm-hmm. And now this European situation has just really thrown a wrench to that.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. Interesting question. Scott V says, this is for Al. The ZL1 has this just incredible exhaust note that doesn't quit. How difficult was it to get past EPA decibel levels?
The great thing about that active exhaust is that it's valved. And just a quick story on that. Everyone told me on the how on the Corvettes they pull the fuse or pull a vacuum line to get that sound all the time. Well, didn't necessarily want that sound all the time because eventually it rubs you raw. So, but we did add a key-up mode. So when you start up in the morning, your neighbors will hear you and when you go to work. And my own example to verify we were going to have a hit on our hands was I live in a cul-de-sac in Rochester, and you don't really see the neighbors much over the winter. And I drove a ZL1 coupe over the winter. And in springtime, when everybody came out to get reacquainted with each other, they said, you know, you leave for work at 5:40 every morning. And I went to work and said, check, we're done.
Yeah.
So you can get the pass-by to pass with being a valve system.
Uh-huh. Because he says at wide open throttle, I have to believe this car is teetering right on the edge of the maximum allowed by law.
Yeah, well, the pass-by test is done based off of gear and where you are at the trap speed and what gear you're in. So,
yeah, so that's irrelevant.
Right.
Move on.
Okay. Phil in Burlington says, in your coverage of ethanol fuels, well, let's stick with Camaro for right now. Here's another guy wants to know what you're going to do in the future. Sorry, Dan. He's already told us he can't do that. Davin DG the 3 Gibson says, it looks like there is a price and performance gap between the 1LE and the ZL1. Is there anything that you'd like to see to fill it?
I don't get that. I mean, you have the SS, and then you have the 1LE, and then you got the ZL1. I mean,
right. Yeah, the ZL1 is kind of standing by itself. The 1LE was meant for the person that wants to race an SS but wants a little bit more than what the SS offers. It wasn't meant to price them out of an SS. Yeah.
He also, just to shorthand it, wants to know about a Z28.
A Z28.
You just never know now, do you?
The beauty of Camaro history is you got a lot of acronyms, and we haven't used that one yet. But
it's just like Ford. Ford does the same thing. I mean, you know, they got a lot of stuff in there.
Al Jadzak, or Jadzak, a retired GM engineer,
I used
says,
to sit by Al Jadzak.
It's good to see that a GM lab rat can make it big.
I used to sit next to him in the test lab.
No kidding.
Yes, I did.
That's cool.
Hey, Al.
And he says, by the way, it sure was a good decision on your part to stay with GM over playing ball with the Tigers. What's this?
That's probably an old story from the lab.
Were you a ball player?
I attempted to be. I'm glad I'm an engineer, though.
Did you get in a minor system or anything?
May have tried unsuccessfully.
What position?
Catcher.
Cool.
Ben, we got another phoner there. Let's bring that one in.
Call is for Al Offenheimer. This is Todd Leppard from Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah, I'd like to know if the current Camaro platform will see a version of the fifth-gen small block during its lifetime. And also, do you guys have anything proposed or in the works that could be able to match the Mustang GT500 as far as raw horsepower is concerned? Keep up the great work, great cars. Thanks, man. Bye.
Okay, great questions. The first question is when I have to take the Sergeant Schultz approach. Yeah. The second one is, I've said this from day one, we set out for more than just adding horsepower to the SS. It was more about technology and performance. I mean, this car makes downforce on the track, and not many people can say that on a production car. So
really?
I felt it was more than just horsepower.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this car is tossable. It's amazing. I just love the thing.
Well, you know, the real litmus test for me was not even so how well it handled and performed and all that, but to me it was just everyday driving.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, commuting, where you don't even have a chance to really get going on it, and it just rode beautifully.
Yeah,
Well,
John, you were hesitant about taking one up north. Right. And you wanted to take something else, but then you were...
Yeah, I was supposed to get a Cadillac
XTS. But you were shocked at the CLM.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, God, this car is just going to beat me up all the way up north. And I was blown away by how... And it's that magnetic
CMR, right? Yeah. And most people like yourself on your trip will experience the great benefits of MR on just regular roads, and won't ever get a chance to test it out on the track. But it's unbelievable with the performance traction settings and the electronic power steering. They're all integrated.
Is that stuff that expensive? I mean, it just looks like a wire going into a shock.
It's a great invention.
It sure is.
But I mean, could this go eventually across the board?
It's in several other performance vehicles.
But I mean, could it go in the Spark at some point in the future?
Sure it could.
You know, I'm just talking for general for the industry. I'm not asking you.
No, sure it could. I mean, it's adaptable to any vehicle. Mm-hmm. If it depends, if you're doing it for just the normal driving, I don't know if the Spark would chin that kind of cost in the car, but.
Right.
If you get it into more vehicles,
but, I mean,
the cost can come down.
Super expensive technology, or
no? We actually use the next generation too, so you'll see future uses of this the same level we have on the ZL1.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Probably be the last question here. Brad Riley says you got a hill holder feature on the manual, including the SS. He says he thinks you got it horribly wrong. Instead of holding the brakes until you depress the gas, it holds the brake for 2 seconds, no matter what. Does he have this right? Leads to the driver fighting the nanny to get going in any normal, quick fashion.
We do have hill hold, and it's based off a combination of parameters about the pitch of the car, the inclines, a 5-degree incline or more. You know, if you have a car that has hill hold, I would just say you got to get used to it. If you're in another Camaro and don't have it, it does kind of surprise you when you see you've got hill hold. But we were just adding another feature that our customers have said we'd like to see it on the car.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any way to turn it off? He also wants to know.
Don't press the brake so hard.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, cool, man. It's been great having you on here talking
Thank
about
you.
All
been
this
Panero
stuff. And it's awesome having a ZL1 in the studio, convertible. Just this brilliant yellow.
Yeah, what's again. This yellow color called?
Uh-oh. You tested my marketing.
No, I just wonder. I mean...
Pull me over yellow?
Yeah. You know, that's one thing. I like when the manufacturers use names for their colors like they did in the 60s. I think there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's a... Absolutely, and have fun with it.
Yeah, they should have more fun with it. I mean, there's some of that now, but there should be more.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is probably a good time to wrap up the show. Al, again, it's been great having you on here. Thanks for bringing the
car. one of the true believers. It's always good to have on our show.
Thank you, Peter. John, thank you.
Yeah, and let's see, we'll have the chief engineer for Avalon next week, too, so that could be kind of interesting as well. And great being with you, Peter.
Great to see you, John. Great to be here. Glad everyone tuned in. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to our sponsors who keep coming back, amazingly enough.
That's right. That's right. And we'll catch you all next week.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. And by Chevrolet. Chevy runs deep.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.